Dr. Rodney Lynn. He's an assistant professor and associate dean in the Institute of Public Health at Georgia State University. His research is focused on childhood obesity, school and community health, and the reduction of health disparities. He has special interest in identifying effective policy and system approaches to increasing physical activity and healthy eating in children. He's a member of the Physical Activity Policy Research Network and serves as Deputy Director for GSU's Center for Excellence on Health Disparities. He's the lead author on two and co-author on three programmed abstracts here at this meeting, and I'll turn it over to him. Thanks.
Thank you. So I don't have any conflicts of interest or relationships to disclose. We've talked a good bit about the potential of the childcare setting already, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here except to say that this is an area of significant interest in Georgia for our Georgia Department of Early Care and Learning. They license all the childcare centers in Georgia, and the program that I'm going to talk about was funded by USDA through the Georgia Department of Early Care and Learning. So certainly we know about the opportunity for the childcare setting as it relates to obesity prevention. This program, again, was implemented by the Georgia Department of Early Care and Learning, and it was really playing off of, many of you may remember, the Child Nutrition and WIC reauthorization of 2004, which focused on wellness policies in schools. And so this was trying to extend that to childcare centers, and so the agency looked to promote wellness policies in child care centers, provided training and technical assistance to centers, and we were asked to evaluate this program. In terms of a program description, you'll see here that these are the things that the centers committed to do in terms of policies. The first four around meeting dietary guidelines, giving children access to water throughout the day, nutrition and physical activity education, and also focusing on NASPE guidelines, National Association for Sport and Physical Education. Then the centers could choose from these other areas, so these are sort of optional, and they receive additional support if they chose some of these additional areas. So the centers received up to $2,000 to support this effort in the center, purchase equipment, activities for the children. So this presentation is really focused on the center director's perspective. So we have other publications and presentations we've done associated with this program that have looked specifically at assessment of the mealtime practices, changes in menus, changes, we've used the EPAO instrument to examine the changes in the nutrition and physical activity environments. And we've seen positive changes across all of those areas. But here we are looking or reporting on our interviews with directors, because we looked at both process impact through a number of process measure surveys. We actually went into the centers, spent at least a whole day on announced in the centers to understand what was happening in terms of changes to the nutrition and physical activity environments. And again, we also conducted these interviews. The center directors were responsible for implementing the changes associated with the wellness policies. Our aims are really to understand the experiences of the child care center directors in implementing the program, and to gain an understanding of were there things that were facilitators or barriers in implementing this sort of program. Was it burdensome? What was helpful in facilitating implementation? These are just some of the things that we were specifically asking about. There were things like accomplishments, changes that they made, resources that they used that were provided. Did they communicate with parents? How did the children react to the program? What were the biggest barriers? And any challenges that they experienced, how those were alleviated, and what sort of efforts were made towards sustainability of the program. So this is just a look at sort of how we collected and analyzed this data. We had interviews and had those transcribed. The interviews were analyzed in InVivo, which is qualitative software many of you are familiar with. And then we reviewed those transcripts, coded them, and then are reporting the themes that emerged from that coding. So these were the four thematic groups from which that emerged from our coding, and that was a lot of information about the implementation process, information about how difficult it was to engage children in these changes, what sorts of activities or strategies were supporting the changes that directors were implementing in the centers, and the issue of parent involvement, which we've heard a little bit about already today. So in terms of implementation process, one of the things that we learned here was that, at least as it relates to these centers and these directors, was that implementing these changes was not a difficult task, that transitioning from canned to frozen foods or refined grains to whole grains to more lean proteins to reduce fat milk, these were things that were not difficult for the centers to implement. They indicated that, you know, in working with their food vendors, they made different choices. And the technical assistance that they were provided throughout this program included a registered dietitian that occasionally made visits to the centers over this one-year period. So that was also helping to facilitate some of these changes. We also saw changes to physical activity. The changes in physical activity went unnoticed by children. Again, these are 2 to 5 year olds. In terms of changing the structure of the day, the schedule for the day, directors reported that this wasn't difficult and that the children enjoyed the new activities that were implemented, both indoors, outdoors, structured, unstructured. And so that also gave us some insight into implementation, the children receiving it well. Implementation process, to discuss that further, hands-on activities for children seem to be very important, experiential learning. There's a quote here that, you know, suggests that children can't tell the difference. Whatever you lead them in, from an activity standpoint, they do, they enjoy, this helped to facilitate implementation. The engagement of children, directors really attributed children's interest in sort of the experiential learning that I just talked about, and whether it was a garden that they started at the child care center or actual activities helping to prepare the food, children were very engaged in all of the activities. And this quote says, from a director, says, "I talked with one of the parents. She said that she carried the little girl to shop with her, and the little girl said, 'Mom, we don't need to buy this. We need to buy this because it's nutritious.'" So there were these anecdotes that also reflected some progress both from the children and children potentially as a change agent with their parents. And I mentioned this already, but just to emphasize it further, you know, engaging children through sort of creative and healthy snacks in terms of their helping to prepare the foods, one of the things that we learned from directors is that if children prepare it, they will eat it. Even if it's something that we would traditionally think they might have trouble not be interested in, if it's new, if they help prepare it, then they're more inclined to be receptive to consuming it. Supports for changes. The resources that were provided to child care centers, again, they received $2,000, as well as the training and technical assistance for the directors. They were able to purchase materials for the child care centers, books, DVDs, CDs, exercises they could do with the children. and things that they could do indoors. It gets very hot in Georgia. It also, you know, rains a fair amount, so being able to engage children in activities inside on days when it's not appropriate to be outdoors, or a time of the day when it's not appropriate to be outdoors. Parental involvement. I think one of the things that was most striking about the interviews with directors is that they found it very difficult to engage parents. And they also found that parents needed a lot of support. This director indicated that they had one parent that said that they had no idea how to feed their child. And so they talked to her, and she seemed to get a lot from the support in terms of how to prepare meals, healthy meals. And so they found that parents didn't frequently attend the events that they had at the centers, and they started to use this sort of parent, the one-on-one parent-teacher conferences as a way to engage the parents, and found some success in that, though it was limited. So in terms of situating sort of our findings in the broader literature, we, you know, found that our findings here in terms of what we learned from directors is fairly consistent with what's in the literature, and that policies in the child care center can increase opportunities for physical activity, healthy eating, the provision of physical activity guidelines and training of staff certainly helps to advance these efforts in the child care center. Providing appropriate physical activity equipment certainly makes a difference as well. Child care centers can certainly facilitate more supportive feeding practices, physical activity behaviors through staff training, and that can be facilitated through staff training and technical assistance. Also found that the best way to engage children is in trying and accepting new foods is through experiential learning, rather than forcing it, engaging them and letting them try it on their own. In terms of some summary and implications of this work, I would suggest that what we learned, at least from the child care centers that we engaged with, was that these changes aren't difficult to adopt, and having children really use hands-on, engaging children through hands-on activities is helps to facilitate their engagement in these changes. A key role that staff caregivers can play and modeling is something that is, I think, very important, and the literature supports that. Just a quick anecdote of my own. I have a daughter, and I can remember a few years ago when she was younger, we were going to visit my mother, and we hadn't seen my mother in a couple of weeks. And before we got there, made sure my daughter was fed, and you know, and so we walk in, and my mother automatically asks her, as any doting grandmother does, "Are you hungry?" And my daughter responds, "Yes, I'm hungry." And I thought, "How is that possible? I just fed you." And you know, she said, "Well, what would you like to eat?" And my daughter responded, "I would like some junk." You know, and I thought, you know, where did she learn that? She didn't learn that at home. But it is that kids are very impressionable, and they spend a lot of time in childcare, often, as my daughter did as well, and I just assume that's where she picked it up. But to train caregivers to ensure that they're communicating with our kids and promoting healthy behaviors around diet and physical activity certainly is important. Parental engagement is critical to sustaining the efforts that we are trying to implement in child care centers, and then I have no doubt from the interviews that the technical assistance of the dietitian that was provided were pivotal in implementing these changes in the child care centers. And to a director, every one of them spoke highly of the individual. And I even think it's not just providing TA, it's how that TA is delivered and the relationship that's built with the providers. And they began to see this TA provider as a part of their team rather than someone from this sort of external program coming in to check on them. So that was, I think, a key element of our program. And then certainly providing resources to these centers whenever we can do that in terms of providing activities, dollars to purchase our resources, support changes to nutrition, that certainly makes a difference. I didn't talk about it here, but as a, in terms of providing actual data, but this program did lead to positive changes in the nutrition and physical activity environment in the child care centers, and that's reported elsewhere in some publications. I do want to acknowledge my research team, all of whom were at Georgia State University, with the exception of Monica Griffin, who was at the Georgia Department of Early Care and Learning, the funding agencies, and the child care centers and directors. This is my contact information and a couple publications that have has come out of this work recently. Thank you.
We do have time for specific questions if we want to start with Dr. Lin, but we can also open it up for everyone. Yes.
The question was, do I think that the increase in vegetable intake that we saw between our two conditions had anything to do with family style meals? And I'd have to say no. I mean, we don't think so, because we try to keep that constant. So the children always serve themselves. All we changed was the spoons they were using. So, I mean, I think the teachers were instructed to behave as they normally would, and so they do have a lot of discussion about the food at the table, but they didn't, we asked them not to talk about the changes we had made. So you hear, what we mostly heard was what they typically do anyway, which is, you know, these carrots are orange, how do they, you know, asking the kids to tell them what they think about them, and that happened in the same way in both conditions.
Did you assess the cost difference between the two meal patterns at all?
We haven't done that yet, but certainly I was running out of time at the end, and one thing that I would love to recommend to USDA is that these changes not be made without some kind of financial or a little bit of an increase to the reimbursement rate, because, you know, it really isn't possible to double your produce and not increase your cost. However, there are ways, other ways that you can save, you know, particularly because the meat portion sizes have been reduced, so you may save some money in that category or food component and spend more somewhere else. Yeah. Yeah. But I think overall costs will go up a little bit. For me?
Actually, I have a question for Wendy. I'm just struck, you know, I hear the preponderance of literature, but I'm so struck by the fact that the younger the age group is also a group that's in a greater amount of health care. And so I have to ask, where are the pediatricians in helping parents understand what's going on and how to look at a 1.5-year-old or a 2-year-old and understand that it's not.
Exactly, as far as, I was looking at the pediatricians, the data. There was many articles about this with, as far as with pediatrics and nursing and pediatrics, and that, yes, that's a big gap there. How do the pediatricians address this? I mean, they're a little bit more willing to address the overweight status of a child when they come into the office. It's getting better than it used to be. But, yeah, that's a big gap of, you know, the parents, sure, they may be aware, but and the pediatrician may be aware, but what do they do about it? And so, yeah, that was a realm that I initially wanted to go into, but that was so huge I couldn't even address it, that I kept running across those type of articles too. But, yeah, excellent point.
And I can add to that a little bit.
Sure.
So yes to the first question. Had the children eaten everything that was served, they would have been able to take in the same number of calories as they would to the CACFP, the current CACFP meal. So the it's really that they just weren't eating enough of it. They did eat some of all of the components, but not enough to get up to that calorie level that we would hope for. And the second question is asking whether or not that could have something to do with the attitudes of the caregivers or the...
Well, not necessarily having to do with it, but were, you know, did the children say they liked it or they didn't like it, or, you know, were there attitude differences, or did the providers say they're not going to eat this, I don't know why we're doing this, or, you know, what, were there differences in attitudes before, you know, the decision, right?
Yeah, well, I have to say we definitely encountered that attitude among caregivers in our initial meetings with them, but we requested that they not voice those opinions in front of the children, and they didn't. And so, you know, we did hear, I don't like this, but I don't think we heard it any more than we did in the other, you know, when they were being served one vegetable instead of two. Kids who tend to eat some vegetables ate when they were given double the amount, they ate a lot more. Kids who tend to not eat any vegetables at all, some of them still ate nothing at all. So it wasn't, I think we have some secondary analyses we need to do to look at specifically who these strategies work for, but overall we saw a really good improvement. So I don't think the caregivers influenced. I think what they did was just not say anything, which was all we could ask for, but I think they were thinking it. Yeah, I expect that we would. I mean, we've seen that in other studies, and it's in the literature. But I know that our pilot, the children in our pilot group who have a cook on site and who are used to having fresh, more fresh food, and, you know, there's really no way around it. If the food's coming from a vendor and it was made at 6 in the morning and kept hot, it's not going to be as appealing as with one that came straight out of the kitchen. So I think exposure, you know, the kids in the other group who have exposure to that fresh produce all the time and are used to it, I think that's probably why they're better eaters than the kids in the other group, maybe the quality, but also the exposure. Because the children in the second group, really, their menus had just changed, but they were eating some very, very, really poor food. You know, they met CACFP requirements. They served vegetables and they served fruit, but it was, you know, the minimum. They didn't have really the resources to do it well. And so I think if they had time with the exposure, you can expect it to increase.
One more, and then we...
I work for Head Start here in the Boston area, and some of the challenges, especially with the whole grain, is actually being able to find a vendor that have a variety of whole grains. So that is so limited from the vendor point of view, and also finding a protein that
that will actually, it's right now the struggle to get, you know, protein sources that will actually cook down to 1.5. So it also means that the food service staff is constantly doing weighing and measuring to make sure that we meet the right portion, you know, for children. And we also have early Head Start children too, so toddlers who we are preparing for that. So both trying to get the, you know, purchase of protein items that will cook down to that amount, and also finding like grain from all of the, you know, from the vendors that use. That's a little bit of the struggle.
Thank you. I'd like to thank our presenters today and everyone for attending.